Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who could benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we together can make a positive influence in the world. Now, today, we're going to dive into emotional intelligence and managing anger with our guest, Dr. J.J. Kelly, who's a licensed clinical psychologist and emotional intelligence skills training expert. Dr. Kelly is the CEO and founder of Unorthodox, Inc., an alternative to traditional psychotherapy and mental health practices. Unorthodox focuses on group processes, mentorship, peer coaching, community outreach, and laughter and love. JJ, welcome to Answers Network.
Hey, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Well, it is my pleasure. And, you know, one of the first things that I want to share is I'm such a fan of any form of therapy that starts with love and laughter.
Yeah, me too.
Yes. So I've really enjoyed reading your book. My question is, what inspired you to write? And for everybody out there, the name of the book, Holy Shit, So This Is Anger? And then you've gone ahead and launched a larger book series. Is there a story that goes with the naming of the book and the series?
Well, I think that maybe two things to that. One is just ride the horse the way it's going. I mean, I'm from the Midwest. I lived in Chicago and Ireland, and cursing is just very much a part of all of Wisconsin, Chicago, all those cultures. So, you know, why fight it? But also, it started with the holy shit my kid is cutting. And I had to actually push for the curse words in that with that first publisher. But I wanted to capture that terror, that that feeling that parents have when they're dealing with something like self-harm, particularly cutting. And I just knew that once they saw that in the title of the book, they would pick it up and they need it. So I just wanted to get it in their hands. And then I just kept writing the books and I thought, well, maybe it's a holy shit series. Let's just do that.
Well, and one of the things that I like about it is that it really hits home quickly to the gut feeling that we're having when some of these things happen, be it, you know, lashing out with anger or, as you said, finding out that your child is cutting. That's got to be a holy shit moment.
Right. And change in general, when you realize that you're really stuck and you're like, holy shit, I need some help. Yeah. You know, there's courage. I just, you know, everything that I do in dialectics is like validate the emotion and then problem solve. So the titles of the books already do a form of validation of whatever emotion or experience they are in. And then I'm the problem solving piece. Teach them the skills.
I love it. Now, for some of the people out there that are listening and going, what the hell are we talking about? Can you share a sort of like a just a personal anecdote or an experience that illustrates the transformative power of effectively learning how to manage your anger?
Yes. Yeah. I think that people, intelligent, educated people, smart people think that stuffing anger or pretending you don't have it is the most effective vehicle for managing it. And that is not managing it. Mm-hmm. And again, with that validation before problem solving, you're invalidating your experience of that emotion. And it's because people are afraid. And I get that, that people are, think of anger as just that explosive, destructive, those behaviors that go with it, when really it's just an emotion like any other emotion that needs some intelligent and effective skills training. So when people that are more in the explosive camp come to me and I'm like, yeah, that sounds like it sucks.
Yeah.
You probably don't want to crash your car into somebody else's car because they're in your parking spot. That got you landed in jail. Yet walking it back, I can understand the source of your anger. Let's just do something different with it that doesn't bite you in the ass later.
Mm-hmm.
Just for you. I mean, forget right. even kindness to others. That's the byproduct. We like that. But right. validation is about unburdening yourself from the that toxic festering of anger. And when the implosive, you know, the people that repress their anger, when they come to me, usually with some sort of high anxiety because of the pressure cooker effect of capping off anger and pretending you don't have it, that skyrockets anxiety and starts panic attacks, which I accidentally figured out that doing anger work for panic attacks makes panic attacks go away. I just happened upon that in my 20 years, and it works like a charm. Crazy. So when they come to me and I'm like, oh, that sounds like might be a little, that might piss you off a little. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, no. You know, like, no, that just makes me sad. Or, you know, I blame myself. You know, they turn it on themselves and shame spiral instead. And I push them a little bit. And I'm like, nah, you know, I think like it's okay. You learned probably in your childhood that anger was not acceptable. So you didn't really learn how to validate it. You weren't encouraged to. But there is such a relief there when I'm like, it's okay. It doesn't make you a bad person to feel anger. It means your boundaries are being crossed.
Now, do you find that a lot of the people that are suppressing this anger is based on their backstory, the things that have happened to them, maybe that they've had somebody in their life, a parent or someone who has been so explosive that it's actually scary about what they think might come out of them?
Oh, for sure. For sure. That happens constantly. I also think, I think culture, whether it be your culture of one, your childhood or your environment, the region in the United States that you grew up in. I mean, certainly Wisconsin, Chicago, New York, they're more explosive. They're more expressive with anger. The Bay Area is much more sees itself and identifies as intellectual, which I agree with. I just think intellectualizing as a defense for emotions does not work long term. So I think people think that it's unevolved in some way to express anger, and then they just repress it. And I mean, give me a break to that. I mean, I got no time for that kind of repression. I mean, no time. I deal with the people all the time and help them, but I mostly make fun of them as a way of sort of wiggling it loose, you know?
Or getting them to vent some of it and see that maybe it's not going to take them down a road that they think it might.
Right. Because passive aggression is still anger, you know, like it's still anger. If you're acting passive aggressively, then you probably that hostility, unacknowledged anger, that's still anger. We still want to deal with that.
Well, when I was doing my research, I came across something I thought was quite interesting in regards to you. And that is, seeing yourself as having been part of the punk culture. So how do you see your background in punk culture having influenced your approach to psychology and emotional intelligence?
Ooh, no one ever asks me that question like that. I love it. I mean, if it weren't for okay, I got to slow down. I'm getting so excited. I think Catholic school probably pushed me to punk and hip hop, first of all. All that anger and repression. And you can see, you know, I'm a pretty passionate person about things, you know, I just let it ride. And I had a ton of anger growing up, and it was, you know, Gen X, it was kind of a loud, It wasn't repressed so much like now. And punk music was just there. It was available. It was a vehicle for expression. And you see, you know, all of us aging punks, we're all sweeties on the inside, you know. Gen X has like a little bit of, we're tough too because we had to be, but that's the exterior. There's mushy on the inside, and I love going to punk shows now. You know, we all have bifocals and like, don't want to break them in the mosh pit, you know, that kind of thing. Like, it's so hilarious and wonderful. We're all just laughing in the crowd. But punk in and of itself is it's not anti-culture per se. It is its own culture. It's like anti-conformity or conformity. Right in the middle is non-conformity. Now, I work in dialectics, so that goes together, that Venn diagram. It isn't black or white. It's where they overlap. It's the gray. We look for that middle path, that balance, that flow. Hey, man, ride the horse away it's going, you know?
I love it. Now, taking this into consideration, now we're talking about different cultures and how it's affected us. How do you think the current culture that we're seeing right now, take that and take us forward? Where do you see that taking us?
Well, that post-pandemic is why I chose to write the anger book when I did. I could see the effects, I mean, so many effects of the pandemic. And one of them is like everybody's just full to the ears with fear and all the inconveniences, terror, the whole thing with the pandemic. And because they're so full, they're just so reactive, such a hairpin trigger on everybody. You can see it with the driving even. Oh my goodness. People just can't tolerate. Their frustration tolerance is fried. So I thought, okay, I better just get that anger book out, or it's just going to get worse and worse. And I think it kind of is. You know, I'm one person. I can teach only so many people at a time. But I'm hoping that the book gets in people's hands so that at least they get a general understanding of anger, because regardless of the climate in our country, I still believe that reasonable people can disagree. Yeah. And we don't have to have the same values. We just have to have enough self-respect even to have some respect for someone else's values and the differences between us. And the exchange of ideas, if they don't agree with us, it doesn't make them wrong. That's so... life is more complicated and nuanced than that. And thank goodness for that, because that's so interesting. And to take it down to its base sort of black and white, like everybody knows black and white thinking leads to depression and anxiety. Like you don't even have to be a shrink to know that. So why wouldn't black and white thinking on a national and global level make for narcissism and problems with anger and violence and intolerance? I mean, I see it at a bigger scale, and I want to do something about it.
And you are. And again, that's why I want everybody to understand, you know, that, you know, although it may be a funny name for a book, it really does go into ways in which we can work with our anger. Okay. And I love what I hear you saying is that we need to get to a point to where, you know, be it political beliefs or whatever, that we can reach across the aisle. In fact, to quote something that I just heard Robert Kennedy Jr. say, is we need to get back to a point to where we can reach across the aisle and say, although we may disagree in regards to this area, we're going to find some common ground that's good for all of us. And it seems that there's been a divisiveness that is trying to push in the opposite direction. And I can see where it's bringing out huge amounts of anger that we don't need.
Yeah. And as a psychologist, to look at all that, I know that someone who doesn't know how to manage their emotions, they project it out in the form of criticism. That's usually fear. They project it out in the form of criticism, and they think the problem is that out there. They never walk it back and say, okay, What, I mean, triggers are everywhere. You think it's a coincidence? Like, you think that's the thing? If that changed, you'd be fine? No. It's the internal process that you have to take a look at, and then you're not triggered by anything. Your wounds are healed, and then stuff bothers you less. And I'm not saying I'm like a monk. I walk around. I yell in my car. I'm like, you know, hey, lady, you need a written invitation, or are you going to take that turn? You know, like, that's a momentary thing.
Okay, but now, isn't that also something that's actually good for us? Because we're not burying it. We're getting something out, and it's not destructive.
Right. If you don't perseverate and ruminate on it, like, if right. it is, first of all, they don't hear me. Right. And then I laugh at myself. So the laughter calms the central nervous system down. That's why I do so much funny in these books, you know, funny helps the medicine go down.
Yep.
So they don't hear me, and I'm not amping up my anger with that. I'm expressing it, and therefore it's coming down. Now, if it amps you up and you keep going and you let it ruin your day, well, then there are more skills training sessions that need to happen there. So yeah, just like swearing, you know, like that's an expression, and it lets it out. Now, I long gone are the days where, you know, family therapy with like padded bats as a form of anger, like that's does not
you
happen.
Talk about bats. I remember those.
Yeah, I mean, all my 80s, we had problems in the field in the 80s. We still have big problems in the field. But, you know, there it is a nuanced dance. I don't just tear the roof off. That can really mess with people. They need to do the anger work in stages that I try to keep it tense enough for to spark change, but not overwhelm them. You don't want to just tear their skin off and leave them naked in the world. That's that will cause big, big problems. So you got to hold them too. And I think the humor helps with that a little. And then just me being a real person with them, I think they trust me, and they should, because I know what the hell I'm doing.
I love that. Actually, when you mentioned about the anger in driving and things like that, and it reminded me of a story, and I'd love to hear your input on it. But I was driving with a friend some years ago, and a car cut us off so badly that it almost forced us like off the road to the point of like flying over a bridge type of thing.
Oh my.
It was very, very difficult. And I swerved, we were almost up on two wheels, and I swerved back, and I looked over away from my passenger, and I said, "I'm sorry." And my passenger friend just, he actually got angry that I was apologizing. He says, "What are you doing?" He goes, "You didn't do anything wrong. That son of a bitch almost killed us." And he's going like this. And I go, "I understand that." And I said, "But if you look at it, you look at you and I, and we are absorbing so much of the universal intelligence around us that we didn't leave any for him." And then my buddy started laughing. And I said, "I feel a lot better now."
Yeah.
Because I made him laugh, because I knew that the anger, the anxiety of what we just went through. Yeah. I was shaking because I thought we were going to fly off of a thing.
Yeah.
But that's where we're just putting a different twist on it. And again, one of the reasons why I like your book is that you'll take things to a humorous point, and then it's as if they sort of forgot what they were angry about.
Totally. It is. It's disarming. It's disrupting. That's a lot of my job. I wanted to ask with your story, how did you feel? Can you name the emotions that you felt in that moment?
I think the first one was fear.
And then
it was anger.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to, and I was shaking.
Yeah.
And I didn't like the feeling, and I wanted to get out of that. In other words, I need to get out of this. And then I had thought about this whole thing. We'd been having a conversation about universal energy and universal intelligence and things like that. And anyway, so
I love that, because it it kind of makes fun of spiritual bypassing and toxic positivity also, which I love to make fun of that. One of my favorite pastimes. Because that's just repression, right? You used a joke about spiritual bypassing as a way to actually process the emotions of the moment. Love it. Love it. Next level. That's next level. Yeah. Because your buddy expressed the anger for you, right? Like, you had that shared terror. He had terror. Then he started expressing the anger that you also felt. And then you helped both of you with the humor. And, you know, shrinks think humor is a defense most of the time. And you know, it can be. It certainly can be. But I think it doesn't make sense to dismiss it. Well, I don't do everything, like anything, all that way. I try to find the balance. It's not all or nothing, black or white, right? But it certainly is a tool when used strategically for both processing emotion and bonding humans. We're connected when we laugh together. You know, I can feel it now. We're laughing together, and that's, you know, connecting us, which makes it better for your listeners.
Absolutely. We're speaking with JJ Kelly, and we are talking about her new book, Holy Shit, So This Is Anger. We're going to take a break. When we come back, JJ, I'd love for you to share with us some of the common misconceptions about anger. So everybody, stay with us. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We're talking with JJ Kelly, and we are talking about, holy shit, this is anger? This is anger. When we went to break, I asked about some of the common misconceptions about anger, and how does your book aim to dispel them?
First of all, I think the most common thing is people thinking that anger is only associated with explosive behaviors and therefore, quote unquote, bad. Yep. And people definitely have implosive anger that they turn in on themselves, they get depressed, they shame spiral, all kinds of, they act in a passive aggressive way. All kinds of things happen in that pole, that side of the spectrum as well. So that's definitely one. And another one is what we were talking about before, spiritual bypassing and toxic positivity. Like just telling people to let go does not work. That's not effective. If they knew how to let it go, they'd have already done it. They're not morons. It's an invalidation statement. and it minimizes, and it's sort of a power trip too. Like the person saying it is like, oh, so evolved and, you know, does yoga all the time and whatever. Like it's nothing against yoga, but I just, you know, there's a culture of like kind of this weird elitism of repression, where it exalts repression, and I am super not into that. So, did that answer your question?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, okay.
Well, so, but let's talk about values and how they play a role in navigating feelings of anger. And how can our audience and those reading your book kind of align their actions with their own core beliefs?
Oh, I love it. Values. Well, they have to know what their values are first. And when I say that, I mean straight up make a list. Like I start people with a brain dump. Because when I say it to people, oh, do you know what your values are? They always say yes. And then I say, okay, great, go write it down and we'll talk about it next time we meet. And then they come back and with like deer in headlights and they're like, I sat down, I was like, I don't even know what values are. You know, they get like weird performance anxiety about it. So I tell people, just brain dump everything. Don't edit. Anything you think is a value, just put it on the list and then bring it and we'll talk about it. What happens then is a lot of them condense into each other, you know, like truth and honesty might be the same thing for someone. And both of those might be courage to tell the truth or be honest. You know, we can get into the nuances of and tailor it to the individual when we meet. But first, just get it down on paper. Then we try to get it to like a top five. So that's all column one. What are your values? I basically say mine in the Holy Shit, What Do Women Want book, the one for young gentlemen and finding partnership. That is, I'm just talking about values through that whole book because that's what you need. You know, they think it's all the woman's fault, so I give that title to it so they pick it up, right? But really what it is developing yourself as a human being, and that includes giving and taking, and that's on most people's values list, is some form of generosity, some sort of contribution to humanity and their community. So you make your list, then column two is all the behaviors that you currently engage in that do not match your values. That's the fun part for me, because people have to face their shame hits that they're going to naturally get by admitting to themselves and another person that they have behaviors they currently engage in that don't match their values. And we have to do that, and we're going to laugh about it. It's going to be fun. We have to do that to bring that dark out into the light. We can't let go of anything we don't first identify, acknowledge, validate. So then we get at the emotions that cause those behaviors that we don't want to do anymore. Then in column three, what are the behaviors we can engage in that do match our values instead of the ones in column two? You see, this is really a simple, and I just made this up one day years ago. You know, I'm always just making stuff up and seeing if it works. And if it doesn't, that's okay. We can throw it in the garbage. You know, that's the importance of having less ego as a doctor, not thinking you're a god. You know, that helps people heal a lot better than you're sick. I know the answer. Do this. And then I go home and go, oh, aren't I the man? You know, like, we have to work together. It has to be collaborative. That's that dialectic again. I'm the expert on the skills. Yes, you're the expert on you. So we work together. We identify. I can't identify your values for you. We have to work together. Then we can laugh together about the ways you're behaving that are biting you in the ass later. And not like I'm immune of that. I'll tell you some of my stories too. We'll laugh together. You know, I'm not perfect either. We don't have to be. And then, hey, what are some of the behaviors that you're going to use your courage to engage in? Because it takes courage to engage in new behaviors, to act differently. Hey, let's choose one of these. Go do it and then report on it to me when we get back. Like, just trying one thing like that is so easy to not only validate, but praise. Like, you were brave this week. That's you just got to be brave over and over again. You do it that first time when you do it, it's going to be scary as hell. But the 51st time you do it, it'll be far less nerve wracking. And so we just got to knock out the first 50.
And, you know, one of the as you were saying that, one of the things I thought of has to do with the book and the way in which the book flows. It sort of flows as if you are. You're with a therapist who's synergizing with you, you know. So I felt that I was getting to know more about you, and saw the areas that we could synergize with. Which then I think as someone as a reader, I'm feeling better about myself.
Totally, yes.
So I love that.
And now, that comes from me being myself. That's an invitation to others to be themselves, and I don't have to be perfect, and you can see I like myself anyway. Hey, you can do that too. There's method in the madness, you know?
Well, we have some questions that have come in, and I've got one. And this goes into the area of relationships. This one reads, I'm a self-employed, hardworking 29-year-old single woman who has been told I'm attractive. That is looking for a long-term relationship, who unfortunately cannot seem to meet a good man. I don't know if I'm doing something wrong, going to the wrong places, or something else I can't think of. What are some unconventional methods to improve my self-awareness and emotional intelligence in the context of dating and relationships? And this is from Jessica in Chicago, Illinois.
Ooh, Chicago, yeah! Oh my gosh, that is a phenomenon too. The hardworking, super smart, funny, cool women in Chicago, oh my gosh, they're such powerhouses. And a lot of them have this complaint. And it's totally valid, except this is what I would say to that, oh boy, is forget about it altogether and try to work, start to heal yourself. There is something unhealed in you. Look for your triggers. Your triggers will tell you the unhealed wound in you. And, you know, it's a lot more nuanced than the like, oh, you meet somebody when you're not trying. No, there are wonderful men everywhere, everywhere. And it is our perspective, our fear. I mean, at 29, what does society say to straight women? Oh, you got to start pumping out babies. You got to get married. You know, there are pressures from society. So there could be fear, and fear will narrow your perspective. So you're surrounded by dudes, cool dudes, sweet dudes, smart dudes everywhere. But your perspective is like this because you're like, got to have a baby, got to get married, got to do this, got to do this. Like, forget the society's rule book, first of all. And the most revolutionary thing you could do is love and like yourself. And everybody, oh, I'm doing it. No, you are not. No, you're not. Because you're still engaging in perfectionism. And that's what a lot of these high-powered women awesomeness, like there's a perfectionistic thing that leads to burnout that is very, very common in these cultures. And so, and it's not just about self-care. It's something on your checklist, too. Like, I'm talking about, can you do nothing? Can you sit in a field and do nothing? And when I say nothing, I don't mean reading. I don't mean meditating, although meditating's awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean doing nothing. Sitting there, being with yourself, with your thoughts. My guess is, nope. Spin. I got to do this. And that is a process that really needs to be examined, because otherwise it's like two incomplete people. I always say like two C's trying to make a fake O in a relationship. That's codependency. That is not love. And if you want two whole O's making a fortified O, you know, that's a real partnership. And so forget what your parents tell you about love, and that you can't prescribe it like that. And I would love to talk to this person. And I do 30-minute free ones. I would love to talk to her because I know a lot about this, even from living in Chicago.
All right. Well,
it's a brave question.
So for Jessica out there, as JJ just said, you know, she does some 30-minute free things. So there's the invitation to be able to call. And at the end of the show, we'll make sure that we know how to get the web. And is it best for them to go to your website?
Yeah, everything's on the website. Yeah.
All right.
But Jessica, make a list of your values. Get real snuggly with your values, because you're putting energy into what do I really want instead of I don't want that. You know what your values are, then you can recognize them in another when you see it. You can feel it too.
Okay. Along those lines, as we're looking at relationships, because obviously there's so many different levels of relationships, what are some of the principles that you have, the strategies that you have in the book that are outlined that people can start doing to improve their overall relationships with people on a daily basis?
Yeah. Stop thinking your triggers are somebody else's responsibility. You're triggering me. Yeah, I'm a shrink. I'm meant to trigger you. I'm a healer. Any healer triggers you to notice your dark shadows, whatever you want to call them. Willful behaviors is what we call them, but like wounds. And it's not that different in romantic relationships trigger all of our childhood wounds, our family wounds. And instead of thinking, stop doing that, it's triggering me, turn it around. Turn that mirror around and be like, okay, that's triggering me. And it's done it before. That same kind of thing has triggered me before. So what is that telling me? First of all, what am I feeling? Pissed off, afraid, whatever. Name the feelings. There's a wheel on the website, a free emotions wheel. Go get that. Get it on the fridge. Start practicing. What am I feeling right now? Because attacked isn't a feeling. That is an assumption about somebody else's intentions.
You know, when you talked about the refrigerator, one of the things that I did with my kids is I had this giant magnet that had about 30 different faces.
Yeah, right. I know that one. Yeah.
You know that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a little magnetic thing that you put over it. Yep. And I would ask them, you know, which one are you feeling right now? So that they could start to look at it and visualize, well, I think that I'm kind of like this. And then it'd be why? So that it would just became something that was sort of a stimulant to get them to talk about things
right.
So that they weren't suppressing these emotions.
Right. I love it because it does take practice and it takes discipline. And seen and heard and attacked are not emotions. If you think you're being attacked, how does it make you feel? If you think you're being really heard, how does that make you feel? And it's amazing to me how geniuses even have the most primitive vocabulary, particularly for the positive ones, joy and love. They say good, bad, stupid. That is not an emotion, stupid. That's a judgment, hardcore judgment. And it probably is affecting your self-esteem how many times you say that to yourself a day. So when you have the love of another person in a romantic relationship, know that part of their job is to teach you where your unhealed wounds are in yourself. So you can thank them for pissing you off because they're teaching you something with those triggers. And instead of trying to control them, because that's another thing, we project our emotions out when we don't know how to manage them. We also try to control everybody, everything. That is self-medication of emotion, just like booze is. You are trying to get away from the emotion instead of effectively manage emotion. That is not an effective tool long-term. So instead of trying to change them, why don't you take a look at yourself and why that particular thing they're doing pisses you off, scares you, makes you sad, whatever it is. And now have the courage to go look at your childhood, your adolescence, that time after undergrad, before you're 30. Wow. So much happens then that nobody talks about. Oh my gosh, is that hard? And so that mirror, stop trying to change everybody else. If I can't do it, you can't do it. I've tried everything. If people would just listen to me, they'd be fine. Like, I don't control people. I don't tell them what to do. You know, like, I'm not attached to being right. If it doesn't work, if I have a suggestion and it doesn't resonate in you, then throw it away. It's garbage. We'll go to a next one.
So, like, so JJ, are you saying that everybody out there has not taken a class in JJ 101?
I know. It is a tragedy.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm trying to get DBT in schools, but the bureaucracy is so, it's really hard to do it. I mean, and they're so overtaxed and overworked. Although the videos, you could just show a video of me teaching emotional. And then if you need me, I'll come, but you don't even have to pay me. Just look at the videos, teach your class, you know, like people, if they taught us this in like middle school, junior high, think of the impact that would have. You wouldn't have all these diagnoses. You wouldn't be giving kids, 16-year-olds, borderline personality disorder. Give me a break. Like, adolescence isn't just all borderline personality disorder. The meds that kids are on. I mean, I don't even use algebra, man. Like, teach me emotional intelligence skills in junior high instead, please.
I love it. I am right with you on that. If you're just tuning in, we are having a ball. I'm speaking with JJ Kelly. We're talking about her new book, Holy Shit. Is this what anger is? So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we have a question that's coming in from a listener, and it's in regards to someone that appears to be going through a divorce, and they've got some joint custody issues as it relates to anger. Yikes, so for everybody, stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. Westshield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through, not just the young person, but the parents, needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. Westshield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. Westshield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step. And we're back, and we're talking about managing anger. So, JJ, we have a question that has come in. This one reads, I'm a 43-year-old divorced man with joint custody of our two teenage children. I struggle at times with anger towards my ex that I don't want to take out on our children. I struggle most when our children are with me and repeat negative things my ex has said about me that are not true. How can I communicate with my children about these situations in a way that is constructive and doesn't involve criticizing their mother? And this is from Frustrated in Phoenix, Arizona.
Frustrated in Phoenix. Oh my gosh, yes. This happens all the time. And you know what? Everybody knows that you don't talk shit about the other parent in front of the kids. Everyone knows that, and I'm shocked at how often it goes on nonetheless. Like, it doesn't, it hurts the kids, man. Like, don't hurt your kids in that way. And I know that it's hard, especially with divorce. Oh my gosh, it's so hard. And so what? It's hard. It's hard raising kids too. Like, you got kids, you made people. Now, try your best not to fuck them up just because you're pissed at another adult. That is not on. You don't do that. So first of all, and I know I'm preaching to the choir because he sounds like he doesn't do it. So that's great. First of all, match your values so that you don't feel shame later and then you do something else weird because you're trying to cover up the shame and it spikes your anxiety. So validate your anger. Now, you can do that by just saying in your head, boy, this is pissing me off again. Yeah, you don't want to say it in front of the kids. And when the kids aren't there, you do some of the anger work. And that means get a big red pen and a big sheet of paper and serial killer handwriting of all the stuff that's pissing you off about her. And just all the ugliness. Let all of that out. And then you know what? Safely set it on fire. Or some people like to tear it up. They like that sensation. I like the fire because it is a physical representation of letting go. We don't live in a culture that, you know, two-year-olds are meditating and we're learning all these like Zen mindfulness things. So we don't grasp what letting go is. But if you see all those hateful words actually disappearing with fire and you're saying to yourself, okay, I'm letting this go now. I'm letting this go now. You will viscerally feel that. And you're not going to be like, oh, I'm great now, happy whistler down the street. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a decrease in that rage. It has an impact. And when you do it repeatedly, it keeps having an impact. And it's just a starting point. It doesn't solve all your problems. However, it does have an impact. You've now validated your emotions. You've done a problem-solving skill that doesn't hurt the kids or you or anybody. And you now have a physical representation of letting go, and it's going to get your mind thinking about what might be another one. So there's forward movement.
You know, and I like all of those things. Can you touch on the area of, because what I'm feeling from this question, first of all, and he didn't give a first name, so I will just call him Frustrated. I love the fact that you're wise enough that you don't want to put down their mother.
Yeah.
I think that's great. But I think the frustration that I'm hearing is the, how do you...
deal with it in the moment.
But yeah, how do you protect yourself? Yeah. And in other words, if you go, these things aren't true, then what you're saying is she's a liar. You know,
right.
so
right. It, great it's, question.
Yeah. You know, I praise this man for the way he's trying to deal with this, but at the same time, I can feel the frustration in the sense of how do you protect yourself and your own the image that you want your children to have for you, while at the same time not throwing the mother under the bus.
Yeah. Yeah, I got it. So we have one of the skills in dialectical behavior therapy is called broken record. It's one of my favorite, and it is quite underrated. So I would suggest that when the iron is cold, that Frustrated in Phoenix sits down by himself and writes out a phrase that matches his values, a phrase to say to the kids. You know it matches your values because you are not emotionally activated at the time that you write it. So it's there for you on paper. Maybe it's on the fridge next to the feelings wheel. That phrase is there for you when you are emotionally activated and you can't think of anything productive to say because you're pissed off and you're way far off your baseline. So whatever that phrase is, maybe it's got to be for him. But something like, your mother and I don't always disagree, which is why we couldn't live together anymore, mm-hmm. Could be one. It could be something like, how did it feel when mom said that? And then just do a feelings process with them, and then you go and write out your anger stuff later. Maybe you want to keep track of what those phrases are because you want to, when you see her, you can ask her not to say those things for the kids. Now, I assume he's already done that in one form or another, or maybe like mediators did or whatever. And we can't control other people. And maybe that's part of it. Well, that bums me out to hear that. I can't control your mother. So I just want you to know that I love you very much. And I know she does too. And I don't want to say things like that about her.
Yeah. And I like that because what I hear you saying is that you're allowing him to use it somewhat as a life lesson for the kids of we can't control what other people say about us,
yeah,
but we can control who we are and what our character is. And because they're going to have kids that are going to say things,
that's
you
right.
know, in school.
Totally.
And they may think back and go, well, yeah, Dad said this is going to happen. So, yeah.
And
I
you
think
can
you're
divert
right on
it.
Target.
you can divert it like that too and be like, oh, so what do you do when kids say things to you at school that aren't so nice? Then what? You're saying that you don't like what she's saying and you're using it as a teaching point without trashing her.
Yep.
There are lots of ways to go with this. Just make sure it's true and it matches your values. Great question.
JJ, I have loved this. I wish that we had another hour.
Me too.
We've run out of time. What is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Everything's on the website, drjjkelly.com. You got the TikTok, all the free content on TikTok and Instagram. You can look at the classes and the books. All of it's on the website.
All right. And if you're driving out there, you couldn't get that down, we'll make sure we have all of that in the show notes. JJ, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on the show, but thank you even more so for you're making a positive difference in the world. And I love that.
Thanks, Alan. I really appreciate that. Thanks.
All right. And for everybody out there, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure that you click the like button. Now, if you're interested in seeing more content like this, subscribe to the show or check out our other shows. You can do it on our channel or the website, both of which are called answers.network, or any other major social media platform. Next week, we're going to be joined by a 40-year expert of abuse and trauma therapy. She's going to share that, unfortunately, the Jeffrey Epsteins of the world, that it's just a tip of the iceberg in regards to a massive problem that's plaguing the world today. We will talk about it. We will also talk about ways that we can keep that from affecting us and our loved ones. For everybody out there watching or listening, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.